What is going on, everybody? Hope you guys are doing well out there. Back for another day of talk about the National Sports Collectors Convention. Today, hopefully, we'll... I don't know if everybody got... you have to almost follow Twitter and kind of know my brother and I maybe better than you might through a podcast or something like that. So I think people might have taken yesterday's show. I tried to put it tongue-in-cheek. Two grumpy old men... That's taking a shot at me and my brother. I think we sounded like two grumpy old men yesterday's show. But really, someone called my brother soft yesterday. And so we kind of wanted to make make a little bit of statement. If you listen to yesterday's show, which I had to put the like explicit parentheses in the title, hopefully everybody saw those that might be sensitive to language. Wanted to let people know maybe we're not as soft as they think, certainly compared to the other media, quote, journalists and all the other whatever titles you want to put people in a hobby like this. I mean, trust me, there's no Ernest Hemingways or people making $1 million writing about baseball cards. Nobody's making $1 million selling baseball cards, but we'll get to, maybe that's my perfect segue. It's all for sale at the National. What do you mean? Sure, everything's for sale at the booths and stuff, but yeah, if you had enough money, you could go buy Upper Deck. You could probably just buy it right there on the spot, and their employees will be like, okay, you going to pay me? Okay, yeah, I'll stay, and I'll keep giving out the wrapper redemptions. Panini's for sale. You can buy them if you wanted to. You buy it for Tops, whether it's rumored in a newspaper or on some obscure blog in France, or whether you hear it through the grapevine. Any of these companies, the majority of companies have gone bankrupt in sports cards, so you better believe somebody would sell it for a piece of liquidity in the company or a profit or even break even. Some of these might even sell it for a slight loss. So it's all for sale, baby, at the National. So we'll come back. I don't really have a whole lot else to say other than that. I mean, it's all for sale. It's not like if you had enough money, you could go buy Apple if you wanted to. I mean, it'd take, more money than most, I think almost anybody has. Several hundred or a couple billion dollars or however much that company's worth. I think at one time it was getting real high. Couple hundred billion bucks or something. So, I mean, you could buy any company on the open stock market. So it's no wonder these other companies for sale, but how comfortable are you eating at a restaurant that's for sale? Would you eat at a restaurant where the chef wanted to sell it? I don't know how good the food would taste. You know what I mean? Do you want to, buy clothes at a clothing store that's closing down? Maybe, because it's closeout and you might get a good deal. But are you going to be able to return something to them, or something like that? I mean, it's just it doesn't make you sit well when every single company is probably, a year or two from going bankrupt. Maybe not even that long. Might be a bad quarter or two from. And when I say the word bankrupt, doesn't mean like they'll stop producing cards. It's not like. When Hostess went bankrupt, they stopped pumping out. I think they did have to close something. I don't know. I think they're still making bread. But it's not like when a company goes bankrupt, all things stop. It's just that they have to do some restructuring of debt that I'm sure they have on the books and things like that. And I'm not saying they'll go bankrupt. But it sure isn't a swing out of left field, considering every Panini brand has come out of bankruptcy. Donruss, Pacific... and whatever brand, Score was bankrupt. Where'd Leaf come from? It wasn't profitable, and then all of a sudden got sold. Sports Kings just got sold to somebody, not because it was a great business, because the owner wanted out and took whatever he could get from whoever was willing to buy it. So, yeah, it's all for sale, baby. So that and more will come back after this very short break with my brother from day two of the 2013 National Sports Collectors Convention in Chicago. Sports Card News on Twitter, and he's here to discuss another day at the National. How'd it go today, Ryan?
Not too bad. Saw some good games. Took some videos. If you go to Sports Card Show on YouTube, I'll have some videos continuously rolling. In fact, I did one where I think I'll try to do this every day, where I just walk down one aisle, and that's going to take 12 to 15 minutes, and just kind of give you a glimpse of one. Instead of showing one booth, I just walk down one aisle, and then the next, tomorrow I'll try to walk down another aisle, and just kind of show you some of the mom and pop dealers, not these big kind of corporate booths and stuff, and just show you what's for sale, and what's going on there? You know, a lot of vintage stuff. This is kind of like a vintage baseball crowd. Talk to some dealers, talk to people in the industry, and overall, it was okay. I think the mood there is a little surprised. I thought it would be a little more upbeat. Thought there would maybe be a little more activity, buzz type. You know, some of those good words, but a lot of money flowing around. I mean, we're talking the dealer who bought 16,000 jersey cards for 50 cents each or something. He spent $8,000 on some jersey cards. I don't know. I'm sure he's going to resell them or do whatever he needs to do with them. A lot of kind of buying and selling going on, high-end items. A lot of dealers do buying there. It's funny because I see some of these dealers, and I've seen them at last year's National, and I've seen them at the San Francisco TriStar, and they still have the same cards as they did last year. And at TriStar, which was in March, a lot of these guys, it's like they don't want to sell the stuff. They don't really understand it. I don't know.
They could be collectors. You know, it could be that, especially at a show that big, it could be that some of these guys are just really collectors, and they're kind of showing it off. And if somebody offers them the money spot, it's kind of like guys that own classic cars. There's lots of guys that have a garage full, and they're only going to sell it if you offer them kind of the top of the mark, or if they really, really, really badly need some money for some reason. But I can see that. I could see a guy that is a lot of collector, has a lot of collector in him, and doesn't want to, especially the high end, you know, the $10,000, $8,000 card. I could see not needing to maybe move that quickly. Unlike, I mean, some of the junk wax. I hope some of the junk wax dealers don't have the same base cards as they did last year. You know what I mean? They need to turn those things over quickly. But that's just my opinion on that, I guess.
Yeah, I think what they do is they do high volume either on eBay or some venue, maybe a store, maybe lots of shows, and I think they sell enough of the, you know, $20, $50, $100, $300 card, $400 card, that they don't, like you said, they don't need to sell that Babe Ruth five-star 101 for 1,000, 2,000 less than maybe what you could get on eBay or true market value or whatever. It is interesting because I hear from just collectors and people who definitely have money to spend that, man, some of these guys don't want to deal, they don't want to sell it, they don't want to give maybe a fair price or good price. That's okay, you know, hey, you know, people can do what they want. And I think there's enough, most of these guys, some of these younger dealers, they're definitely online, they're on eBay, they're doing their thing, and they're churning in enough money and making profit on some of these single cards, or, you know, a lot of times they get a big lot. You know, they don't just buy one card at a time. There's one guy I was talking to about some of his cards, and there was a guy standing kind of next to me who was selling him stuff, you know, and he was going to spend about $1,500, but he was going to get all this graded stuff, all these autographs, rookies, and, you know, decent stuff, nothing worth a ton of money, but several cards that were going to be worth a couple hundred and a bunch of $20, $30, $40 cards that these guys can easily turn over on eBay, turn over in their store if they have one, turn over on another show. So I think, yeah, which, you know, it maybe doesn't make for a lot of, you know, most of the money seems to be flowing through boxes or through private kind of deals. You know, the 16,000 graded cards, not graded cards, the jersey cards. So, you know, that's just those types of things. I enjoyed walking around, but very heavy vintage baseball, you know, at this show. And maybe not a whole lot of other things going on besides just walking around. And I was talking to a couple people today, and they made a good point. I mean, the national organizers, they want you on the floor spending money. Not like at say the industry summit where you have discussions and you have people talking and you know you're not spending money there. You're discussing things and talking things about things. Whereas here, the goal is to get people onto the show floor and either go to the autograph pavilion and buy an autograph ticket for Roger Clemens and a photo opportunity for Lou Brock or whoever. Or go out onto the kind of dealer floor, corporate booth, and spend money. And I get that. And apparently attendance is up. And maybe that's the case. I would think that it's up maybe slightly. I was hearing things like 20% or something like that, which is a decent number, but that's to be expected. Baltimore, a lot of dealers didn't like Baltimore. One dealer I talked to, he's gone to the last 24 Nationals, and last year in Baltimore was the first year he'd ever lost money. Lost several thousand dollars. Driving out there, the hotels are expensive. Not that the hotels here are cheap, but a little, you could find a cheaper place if you stayed just a little further away from the Rosemont convention center. There's a lot of, you know, the hotels around here are kind of sold out, but it's not because of the baseball card convention. That's just a small piece. I mean, in my hotel, there's like all these people walking around in suits and really attractive women and professional attire going to these GE meetings. There was like all these, like, you know, big Fortune 500 company kind of things that they had going on and stuff. So, overall, you know, if I had to grade the first 2 days, we're probably looking at like a C or a C plus. So not terribly exciting. Not a whole lot of buzz. But maybe that's just me. Maybe that's just, kind of where I am. I'm sure people who, you know, they're just collectors. And they're just looking for their favorite team, or they're looking for some Detroit Tiger cards, or they're looking for an autograph. They're probably having a good time. or they want to go open some boxes and get a wrapper redemption, they're probably having a good time, by and large. So overall, I think the experience so far has been decent, and we'll see what happens come Friday. Tomorrow should be, it's Friday, so probably a few more people will come in to town. And then Tops is doing a meet and greet from 8 to 10, where we'll see if they're supposedly going to do question and answers. I've heard that some of the collectors attending, that are going to attend this, are prepared to ask some difficult questions. And if we kind of flash back to last year, Pops did a meet and greet. Customer service and kind of the problems that maybe we've seen over the last 8 months weren't really prevalent 12 months ago, or they hadn't really bubbled to the surface quite yet. The customer service problems at Tops really started to kind of bubble over around, kind of when you kind of started calling them out around October, November, December, January, and then into the kind of the industry summit in March. And so now it's kind of become a topic, an issue. And so I'm hopeful that there will be some collectors that will raise some issues. And if they don't, then I'll probably raise some issues. So, and just speak on some of the emails that I've gotten and collectors that I've heard from and redemptions that I know are still out, not been redeemed. And, you know, 18 months later, I'm thinking about one that was from January 2012. That was a golden ticket ball, Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, King Griffey Jr. signed ball that a collector has emailed me almost a year ago about, and have been just corresponding with off and on. So things like that definitely concern me, and hopefully collectors do have some, and maybe not all about redemption, maybe about the products themselves. A lot of these collectors, they spend a lot of money. They're extremely knowledgeable about these sets, extremely knowledgeable. They know the sets like the back of their hand. They anticipate these sets coming out, like Bowman, like Series 1, like Gypsy Queen, Ginter, on and on down the line. Just talking about Tops here. So, you know, maybe these products are not as good as they were a year or two ago. And there could be a lot of reasons for that. The leagues and the players' associations, the leagues as in MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, they charge a lot of money to Topps and Panini and Upper Deck to license these cards. It's extremely expensive. I don't know what the going licensing rate, like if you wanted to license Hello Kitty, and I wanted to make Hello Kitty trading cards, I don't think that's going to be a 20% royalty off the top, which it is for the NBA, which it is for the MLB, which it is for the NFL. Talking about a 20% royalty. So before Topps and Panini gets out of bed, they have to cut a 20% check off the top.
It's like eBay.
Their sales. Yeah, it is. And look, and think about it. Yeah, and collectors can kind of relate to this with eBay. You know, you sell something on eBay, and then you get, you know, you get hit with the final value fee, you get hit with the PayPal fee, and there's 18 to 20% gone before you do anything, before you've paid anything, before you've paid your own bills, before you've paid your own employees, before you've paid Yasiel Puig to sign the autograph, before you've done anything, print one single card, 20% of every sale that you make is gone. you have to, you know, keep that in perspective. And then obviously Panini, Ultimate, I don't even want to go down the list, all the companies are for profit. So because they have to give 20% to the league, Panini, they need to make money. So how much money do they need to make? Probably roughly about 20 to 30%. So literally every product is lopping off, boom, half of the sales are gone. Literally gone. Can't go toward the product, can't go toward the getting Yasiel Puig to sign autographs, can't go toward fulfilling past redemptions. Half of the money is gone. It's a dangerous, very, very dangerous.
That's why so many companies have gone bankrupt. More companies in cards have gone bankrupt than have sold for a profit ever.
And here's the issue, is that the NFL continues to get more popular. The NBA continues to get more popular. The MLB continues to get more popular. It's not going to get cheaper.
Nope.
To license these cards. At the end of the day, the NFL may say, you can't afford our 20%? Cool. We make $1 billion every year. Why do we need your $250 million that we make off the royalties from the NFL license? We'll just wipe that. No football cards. We're done. Players Association, if you want to license Leafs, if you want to license Panini, but you can't use our logos. You can't use our team names. You can't put Tom Brady in uniform. Can't show any of that. Can't show our NFL logo. So, you know, because sports continues to get more popular, and that's why these companies, like Top, dips into MLS. You know, you see these kind of niche product Olympics, you know, in like, the Upper Deck NCAA license. The NCAA license is not a 20% royalty. Why? Because it's just not as desirable. There's not as that many people competing for it. There's not a Players Association, because see, this is what happens. If the NFL takes their 15%, okay, royalty, and then, that's the NFL. The Players Association, the governing body of the Players Association, they get their royalty too. So they tack on another 5%. So that's how you get to the 20% market. But yeah, you could license the NFL, and you could make cards that just said New England Patriots. Here's a New England Patriots helmet on a card. There you go. 15% royalty to do that. Oh, but if you want to put Tom Brady, that's where the Players Association has to get involved. And now they want their 6%. And this doesn't even count getting Tom Brady to sign autographs. That's now a separate deal. Now you have to go to Tom Brady and get him to sign 1,000 cards for $75 each. Now there's $75,000 gone just for Tom Brady. You got to get Jamal Charles. You got to get Maurice Jones-Drew. You got to get legends like Steve Young and Joe Montana, and on down the line. And I don't think I hope collectors start to become, maybe not collectors, but dealers, people who are selling boxes, group breakers, people who have a hobby store. People who rely on new products coming out. They have to sell this new product. They have to sell it by the box. They have to do group breaks. They have to sell packs. However you're selling it, in whatever venue of toys, online or, you know, at a show or at raffle. A store, or raffle, you 50% of the money that went into that product is lost. Company has to make a profit. The NFL is guaranteed to take their 20%. I mean, that's just gone. They take a 20% royalty, but then they also charge you a fee per year to have the license. Usually that's in the multi-million dollars. So, and again, the NFL is extremely popular and makes billions upon billions of dollars a year. There would be a lot of people, besides Nike, who would love to make NFL jerseys. Love to make NFL jerseys. But, Nike, I mean, you don't even want to see the check Nike cuts to the NFL. You don't want to see the check that New Era cuts the MLB. There are a lot of people that would love to make fitted hats, probably. But New Era probably pays a ridiculous amount of money for that license. And then a royalty on top. It could be 20%. I don't know. Hats are a lot cheaper to make, probably, at the end of the day than sports cards. And there's probably a better margin there. At the end of the day, for New Era, maybe not for a dealer, but for New Era, you know, they can probably make these hats for, I don't know, what do you think, $5 or $6?
They're doing it in China. Most of it in China.
Could be talking about $2. Pennies. Yeah, could be talking about less than a dollar. I don't know, but the fees and all the stuff is.
And they got to freight it over. I mean, it's not pennies per hat, but in the end, it's not very much.
It's not very much. It's not a set of cards that could go down in value.
And that's a business you can scale. You can make hats over and over and over again and over and over again at 30 different teams and 20 million different colors like they do. Whereas group breaking and even selling cards and having a card shop is not that kind of business. You can't scale up quickly. You want to be the licensor. You don't want to be Panini. You don't want to be Panini paying the NFL and putting money in their pocket without them even doing anything. You want to be on the NFL's end. You want to admire the NFL's business. You want to admire those kind of businesses, not box breakers that run illegal raffles and host on Vaughn Live TV. Those aren't companies. Those aren't businesses to admire. The NFL raping Panini and Topps and whoever else wants to pay them. That's the business to admire.
Right. And you can see, and this points to some of the issues that Topps is having and that issues that Upper Deck has had. Those are very well documented. Extremely well documented.
Their bankroller died. I don't mean to make light of that, and I think it's been long enough. But the guy that owned the company that passed away, apparently he was the guy that bankrolled them a lot of the times and got them a loan or got them money when they needed it or got them a license or somehow came up with money. It doesn't surprise me that company's broke.
Right, and apparently, just from whispers I was hearing today, they have a very nice booth set up over there at Upper Deck, but... I'm going to be curious to see what that company looks like in 2 or 3 years' time. A, what is the ownership? I mean, there's every company for sale. Topps to Upper Deck to Panini to everybody. Everybody's for sale. If somebody, there are no buyers.
They just wait till you go bankrupt, like every other company is gone.
Right. They could wait. They can just wait it out. Even if they don't, I mean, not if they want to enter the market. I got to pay 20% royalty, and we're talking about baseball cards. We're not talking about Nike jerseys. We're not talking about New Era hats. We're not talking about DirecTV. We're not talking about, you know, television, which is how most of these leagues actually generate a lot of money, is licensing the television rights. And a lot of times, here's the funny thing, is from what I've heard, and somebody maybe who knows more, could correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that CBS, ESPN, ABC, they don't make a lot of money.
Nope, they don't.
Producing the NFL.
It's to promo their other shows. It's to promo the Big Bang Theory. It's to promo 60 Minutes.
Right.
That's how they make that. They probably lose money. In the long run, they probably lose money. But they gain it all in viewerships and ratings, and so they can charge $1 million for a half-second ad on Big Bang Theory or whatever, which is actually a highly rated show, but you get the idea.
Right. And you know, the risk for the NFL is if their sport isn't as popular, they're not going to be able to sell the TV rights for as much, or they're not going to be able to sell as many jerseys or baseball cards and on down the line. So that's why the NFL and the league, they really try to protect their brand. They do limit. I mean, it's not like I could create, you know, a sports card set. No, you can't do that. You got to, you know, go through all this process to get a license. But just what, you know, I was talking to a lot of people today. Probably doing a lot more talking than looking or buying or trying to really do anything. So, found out just some really interesting thing. And what I, you know, what I'm finding out isn't, you know, if you project 5 to 10 years out, none of these companies have a very good trajectory. Except for maybe some of the smaller ones who are doing smaller things. They're trying to say small. There's actually a company that doesn't have very many licenses, but they're actually trying to say small, not trying to get an NFL license. I can bring up any. I didn't talk to this person today, so I feel okay about just saying it. Somebody like historic autograph companies. I talked to most some collectors probably not even know that these guys make sets.
Yeah.
Super nice guy runs the company. I've talked to him several times. I think his name's Kevin. Super nice guy. Just talking to him and talk to you about anything. He'll show you all the cards. He's going to have them in the set. He's not trying to change the world. He's trying to come out with 5 or 6, maybe 10 products a year. He's kind of cut signature, buyback, kind of graded, kind of stuff. More cut signature, but he's more into the cut signature game. So get, you know, a bunch of cut signature, authenticate them through PSA DNA or Beckett or whoever, and then put them into his product and you know, make some money. He's not trying to run a huge business.
And that's okay.
He's trying to have. And that's right, yeah, exactly.
That's actually smart. That's a sign of a good business owner, a guy that realizes that maybe he should just, maybe this should remain, and small is a relative word. But maybe I shouldn't try to become Topps or, you know, try to buy Topps or try to get the MLB license or get a Mike Trout exclusive autograph contract or something. It doesn't make sense a lot of the times. The more money – I mean, there's a lot of public companies that go public and then they blow all the money. And all of a sudden they're in the red. And they got to shed – like Zynga is probably the best example of a recent company that's done that. Just got filthy rich, bought office buildings and all this cool stuff and basketball courts, and they had to lay everybody off and everybody's leaving. Sometimes you should remain small or remain in the little niche that you found and leave yourself there. You know what I mean?
And dominate and not dominate, but just do well at your niche. And maybe maybe at that point you need 3 businesses.
Right. Or 4.
And that's okay. That's an okay thing. But it's, I got some reassurances. I think, what was the title of the last show? It was called Grumpy Old Men.
Yeah, it's kind of almost referring to us. I didn't want it to, it was kind of referring to everybody. I mean, we talked about it being old men at the show, so I thought it fit well. But for those that might not know, I was really taking a shot at myself. I mean, we sounded probably a little bit like 2 grumpy old men yesterday on a podcast, and I don't mind taking. I mean, it's a podcast. Like, I'd be lucky if 100 people listened to it. I mean, who cares? I don't care how many people listen. Like, I mean, if one person listens, I'm happy. You do this long enough, you don't care about the listeners, really. Like, I mean, they're going to be there or they're not. So,
it's also not. To be fair, it's not a business for us.
No,
we're not going to have the blowout card ad here or the historic autograph ad here, you know, promoting their product. It's more of just us kind of discussing.
Right, and grumpy old men, I thought we sounded like grumpy old men, and that's okay sometimes. You know what I mean?
Right. But to speak to the grumpy old men point, I was talking to some people today, and it was reaffirmed that, wow, you know, This is an old guy's convention. This is a vintage baseball, you know, vintage baseball king here.
That's cool. Those are the cards that are worth money. Like, that haven't gone down very much. It's like a 60s Corvette.
They haven't gone down very much. Right. There's value there. I don't want to say limited, because I probably saw at least 5 or 6 1952 Mickey Mantle cards today. One that was graded TSA 10.
Wow.
I believe the Arizona Diamondbacks owner, who obviously has a lot of money, he's not from sports cards.
No, really? He didn't make his his fortune in sports cards. Oh my god!
Yeah, believe it or not, the guy who owns the Arizona Diamondbacks, he didn't make his living.
Shocking.
In group break. Yeah, he didn't. He didn't make his living in group break.
Does he group break now?
He does not group break. This is far to my knowledge, the owner of the Arizona Diamondbacks does not group break.
Okay, well, maybe we can convert him by next year's National. We'll see. But go on with your story.
Yeah. So, yeah, there was a PSA 10. I mean, I saw some really nice cards today. Do you remember the 1998 SB Authentic Football with Randy Moss?
Yeah, that stuff's...
And, you know, remember those Future Watch cards, how they were really...
Yeah, they had, like, a foil kind of on them, almost.
Yeah, they came out of the pack like a PSA 7. Like,
right.
If you got a PSA 7 out of the pack, it was good. I saw a BGS 10.
Whoa, of who?
Of Peyton.
Wow, that is a huge card. Wow.
I think I saw 2 of them, actually. I don't know how many you could go there. Like, if you go to PSA and if you go to BGS, like, if you type in BGS population report in Google or PSA population report, you could eventually get to, you know, you could filter things out and you could find out how many, you know, how many have they graded as a Peyton Manning 1998 SB Authentic, and then how many have they graded BGS 9.5, and then how many have been graded BGS 10. I might even look that up at some point, just my own curiosity. There can't be more than 20 of these pristine 10. I mean, maybe less than that. I don't know.
There's not that many of those cards. I think they were, what, 1998 or what? Whatever they're numbered out of.
Yeah, they were real numbers, and they're really, I mean, they're super hard to get.
Super.
So, PSA 10, Montana rookie. PSA 10, Walter Payton rookie. One guy from Florida had all kinds of nice stuff. I mean, he had stuff that I'd seen in San Francisco. Maybe he was in San Francisco. I don't know. Some of the cards look familiar. And, he just had nice stuff. And there were like 5 or 6 people around his booth the whole time talking to him. Hey, how much is this? How much for this? Hey, do you want to trade for this? How much for, you know, would you buy this? Or how much is that card? A lot of that going on. You know, people looking, people willing to spend money. Because these are older guys and stuff. I mean, they have money, they're here. I haven't really talked too much about the show. I hope you go to the YouTube. That's where you're going to get a visual. I can't really paint a picture. You know, it's a giant, you know, warehouse-type building, 500,000 square feet, with just tables and booths set up and stuff. You know, the most fun booth might be the Leaf booth, because they have the bench. They have a little bench, the bench warmer girl. They have like 4 or 5 of them there the whole time, signing and taking pictures. And they have really affordable stuff at the Leaf booth. Like, this is just totally random. A Charles Oakley autographed jersey, you know, like a really authentic, nice jersey, $39. Authentic autographed football is $15. I mean, the football is worth more than $15.
Right.
I mean, like, literally, a Nolan Ryan autograph, $25. Where can you get a Nolan Ryan autograph for $25? They had other, Brandy, they had a really nice, it was a Brandy Chastain, a soccer player.
Right.
Nike autographed jersey for like $39. You know, just like, and Robert Parrish, $49 jersey and stuff. Like, just real cheap stuff. They didn't have any Lakers or Giants or somebody that I had to have. I would have bought some of this stuff because I was like, wow, this is really cheap. 8x10 for like $8-$9. Autographed mini helmets for like $15 to $20. Whereas a mini helmet on its own is going to cost $15 to $20, I think.
At least.
So he's so there's actually, it's funny because he actually has some very affordable stuff at his booth. And there's other guys. There's a guy actually over by the autograph pavilion. It was a Ken Griffey Jr. autographed, Upper Deck authenticated, autographed, so you know it's legit. and it was $99, but the frame that it was in was probably worth $100 to $150. Nice. Bucks. It was crazy. I wish they would have it closer to where I could drive or I could, you know, something, because I was like, wow, I'd buy some of this stuff. Like, it's crazy how not everything's a good deal. Not all these guys want to sell their stuff, like we talked about, but then you will stumble across some stuff where you're like, yeah, I'm not a big Griffey fan, but damn, I gotta have that. Like,
right.
For $100.
That's cool. That's
like,
cool.
Wow. Yeah, so, you know, stuff like that. And I think by and large, people are having an okay time, but I don't see a whole lot of, like, people just really in a good mood. It's more just people kind of tired. The food there is extremely expensive. Mm. You get a little, what is this, equivalent to about half a can of Pepsi, like literally. You get about a half a can of Pepsi for $2.75. And then, you know, if you buy a hot dog, it's like a crappy hot dog. You wouldn't want to eat it. It's like $4.50. And so it's like, you know, it's like AT&T Park pricing and stuff. Like, it's like, you know, Wrigley Field. And even Wrigley Field's cheaper. I think the nachos at Wrigley Field, which are okay. They're not bad. They're all right. I think I bought a big soda and some nachos at Wrigley for like $11. Whereas it would cost you about $9 or $10 at the National. And the nachos looked horrendous. Like, I'm game for nachos pretty much at any moment of the day. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Really? I'm down for nachos, but I would not, if somebody gave me the nachos they were serving at the National, I wouldn't touch it with a 10-yard stick. And the pizza, ooh. Like, you don't want to mess with deep dish unless it's from Lou Malnati's, from one of these little mom-and-pop places that, you know, it's the only one in town. They just have this legendary deep dish pizza and they cook it for 40 minutes. Like, it takes about an hour to make a deep dish pizza. I mean, this deep dish that they're serving at the National looks like it's... But that's the food. It's a food service, not a part. I don't want to make it seem like I'm bashing the National. They have nothing to do with the food service. That's all outsourced. It's like going to a minor league game. All of it is outsourced. All outsourced to some other company. They don't choose the prices. They probably don't even get a cut of the, you know, the best deal actually is the soft serve ice cream for $2.50, where you get a little cone and you get a chocolate vanilla swirl. I mean, I had two of those today. It was very good.
It sounds like there's a lucrative, you know, instead of going there and competing against all the dealers that might have better cards and better inventory than you, I'd go in there. Not that you could do it. I'm sure the conference hall has rules and regulations on it. But it sounds like if you rolled around a hot dog cart, or you had some fresh deep dish pizza, or you had like even just some sunflower seeds or some snacks people could snack on, sounds like you could make probably a pretty good profit there. It sounds like you could sell things for a good markup, much better than most people are doing on their cards. Maybe next year somebody will set up a booth and they'll be frying fajitas or something.
That would be great. It would have been the most popular booth. There was one deal, I bought some Skittles from one dealer, and he was like, yeah, these are the best sellers right here, my candy and stuff. There's some dealers that I have candy and stuff for a dollar and stuff, and
right.
I'll pick up a bag. And
it's probably a smart thing to do.
Yeah, in Baltimore, there was guys who would stand outside, and you could get a dollar bottle of water, $1.50 Gatorade, whatever. And these guys crushed it, you know? I don't see anybody, they probably do regulate it a little more. And this is a little more, Baltimore, I don't want to say it was not upscale, because you were kind of in the heart of downtown there, but you could walk a little ways from Baltimore, and you basically got to, I'm from the ghetto, so I can say that, oh yeah, you got to the ghetto. So yeah, you walked a few miles in Baltimore, not a few miles, you walked like a block or two, and you were essentially in the ghetto. Here, this is more like, you know, you're right next to the airport, so they, you know, and then these hotels are a little more upscale. They have these big, expensive restaurants, with several, like five or six that are very expensive steakhouses and nice. $50 steaks. And I eat it one, it was fantastic. Yeah, it was great. The service was amazing. Yeah, so, I mean, literally, I sat out, and there were like three guys at my table. Right. Like, the second my butt hit the seat, there were three guys at my table. I'm like, hey guys, like, you guys are fucking doing a fantastic job. Like, you keep this up, and I'm going to tip more than the meal is. So, it was, so, you know, it's a little different atmosphere this year. I couldn't find, there was one dealer that I thought for sure I would find, but I just can't find him. Last year, he had everything at his table was a dollar. He just kept throwing more stuff out, more stuff. And I literally would go to this guy like two or three times. Last year in Baltimore, I would go to this guy like two or three times in a day because he kept putting out more stuff. Like, boom, boom, we kept putting out more stuff. It was a good place for me to get. I was trying to fill out some blocks. Last year, Check Out My Cards had like this insane deal and stuff where submission on cards and stuff. So I was literally trying to like buy like several thousand cards and not spend that much money. And so it was great because this guy, he would throw out like sets though, and they were a dollar. You know, so he pulled like, I now had 25 cards that I only paid a dollar for total. And I can't find that guy. So I guess he didn't come.
He ran out, bro. He is tough.
Yeah. I mean, I was a little disappointed. You know, one of the guys, I think I've seen this eBay. I need to research his eBay a little more, but he seemed like he was crushing it. I'm probably not going to say this right. His eBay name is like Probstein 123. And this guy had this amazing operation he had. First of all, he does consignments. So if you want to sell something on eBay and you have something decent or nice, he'll sell it for you.
Right.
And I was looking at how much he charges, and it was like, seemed like really reasonable that, like, you got like 90% of whatever, you know, something sold for $100. Seemed like he took home. Like, I don't know how he did it. He probably gets, you know, his fees are heavily reducted on eBay because he's a power seller. And
right.
Da, 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 da. But it seemed like he was, you know, he was only taking, his cut from you was only a few percent. This guy had nine people working at his booth. And he had about nine laptops set up. He was shipping stuff. He was listing, these people that are working for him, listing stuff, you know, and then he was talking to people trying to get them to consign stuff. And it just seemed like he had a very, on the surface, a very well-organized kind of operation. It seemed like he was offering a very fair percentage to sell on eBay. And he has a huge market on eBay because he's like a big seller. And like I said, I've heard of him. I've seen his auctions. I've seen his name. I've seen his stuff on eBay. So it seemed like he had a really good, solid thing going. So that was one positive thing that, you know, I saw this guy.
So this guy has like a bunch of employees and stuff. I expect the, you probably saw some box breakers there. They must have had at least 9 or 10 employees too, with laptops and doing the whole thing. I mean, right? I mean, that's how they roll.
Well, I saw some of your favorite guys who love to take shots at you, and I think one, I don't even want to mention these guys' names. I've gotten to the point where I don't even know their name. Yeah, I don't know their name, and I don't even want to, like, publicize them. There's one guy who I think chided you today about, you know, showing off bank accounts or something like that, and literally, from the 9 o'clock in the morning till I left the show floor at 6, this guy was stuck in front of a camera opening cards. He didn't get to go up and join the show floor. He didn't get to go talk to some of the actually really cool employees that do work in this industry. And there are a few.
Certainly.
There are some people,
yes,
that I just love talking to that are like just cool guys that will literally share information with you that you're not going to get anywhere else. And there were some people today, and you know, I'm not going to say names or anything, but you know, they literally said, "Here, Ryan, sit down. Let me break this all down for you. Let me break this industry down for you. Let me tell you about some numbers."
And it's always great learning something new. Like, you should always think that you're an idiot, I think, and always be willing. Somebody that's been in this business for even longer than we have will sit down with you and tell you about things you maybe only know bits and pieces about. That's what's so great about, you know, not you know, always trying to listen to what other people have to say. Always try to learn new things, learn new business models, learn new business ideas. Don't think that you have it nailed down to the wall and your business model's perfect and everything's rosy.
Right. And I have to give a shout out to the car shop owner from Burlington, Iowa. First of all, he recognized me when I got to the show, and he had his friend there, and I talked to them for like 20-30 minutes today. We didn't even talk about cars. We were talking about other stuff. Was just the nicest guy in the world. He was like, "Hey, if you buy something big, if you buy a bat or something, just bring it over to the booth and leave it on the table so that you don't have to carry it around." I mean, the guy was just the coolest guy in the world. He's an older guy, not real old, but quite a bit older than me. Could be my grandfather and stuff, but the two nicest guys in the world. "Hey, have you ever been to Colorado?" Or "Hey, what did you think of Iowa?" And, you know, on and on. You know, we just talked about traveling and Chicago and just, you know, nothing about business and stuff. So I really enjoyed that. And just, you know, talking to other people and getting their sense. And, you know, probably people think that, like, they heard me maybe last night drop an F-bomb and then I go in there and, you know, get in front of the face of these guys and start dropping F-bombs. No, I listen. When the guy was like, "Hey, Ryan, let's talk for 20 minutes. I didn't say a word. I just listened to him talk. When he just broke down the whole number, business, this, I just listened and asked questions. That's all I did. I didn't say F you. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I learned. That's how I'm able to form my own opinion. And I don't know if some of these people who will take shots at you, take shots at me, maybe they haven't taken the time to listen or to learn. Maybe they take for granted that for the last 3 or 4 years, that's what I've done. I've gone to Vegas and listened to people like Mark Anderson, who's extremely intelligent and now works at Check On My Card. I've listened to people who are intelligent, and I've listened to people who I don't think are intelligent, or that maybe aren't in this industry anymore. So, you know, me and you've actually done our homework, and some of this group-breaking stuff, this raffling, guess what? All that turned out to be true. Every single guy that you called out, they were doing raffles. And, oh, yeah, there was 20 or 50 more of them that were doing it, too. So, things that I said yesterday about it being an old man convention and people chiming in about it and getting angry about it, guess what? It's true. Get on a plane. Like, most of the people that are complaining or they're, you know, talking, they're not here. They're not here. And for whatever reason, they're jealous. I don't know. They see that, you know, we talk about how neither of us really work or very much. I mean, I don't want to make it seem like I don't do anything 24 hours a day.
It's fun to work sometimes.
I have to work at some point. our parents aren't funding anything. I don't get a dime. You know, I don't have Johnny Manziel's parents who can, you know, fly me out to Pebble Beach and play on a golf course. No, if I go play golf, it's because I know somebody or I paid myself. When I went to see Pearl Jam, I paid myself. I paid my own flight. I didn't, you know, everything. I don't have a company credit card.
Or sugar mama wife.
I don't have a wife. I do not have a wife that, you know, who can support me or who we kind of pool our income. I don't have a wife. You don't either. Well, you will soon, but
pretty soon.
You're not gonna make her work 12 hours a day while you sit in front of a camera with a baseball card. But I think, you know, people, before you jump on, and I know a lot of people probably are listening to this stuff, especially recently with the whole group breaking thing, and which is turned out to be a pretty big deal, apparently. I mean, there are a lot of people that have come up to me and talked to me about that. And there's a lot of people who have come up to me, and I appreciate these people. They've come up to me and they say, keep doing what you're doing. Fuck these guys. Keep talking shit on these fools. Keep fucking blasting tops. Keep at it. We need that different perspective. We need that different perspective. Because there's always going to be those people in the industry and the media who don't want to rock the boat. And that's fine, because you got to make a living. You got to, when you rock the boat, and we talked about this last night, when you rock the boat, you're probably not going to make as much money, because you're going to piss some people off, you're going to, alienate some people, you're not going to get partnership, you're not going to get, them kind of companies promoting you.
You don't need any of that in this.
You don't need any.
Maybe in other niches, maybe, probably not, but you don't need that here.
The only thing I could think of is like the LA Times or something. They wouldn't go and blast Kobe every day, because at some point the Lakers would probably be like, okay, you're not invited to our practice facility. You're not invited after the game into the media room. You don't get locker room access. So I could see how, some of these, maybe to play like into the sports media world, a lot of these beat writers, they're very afraid to knock the player. They're very afraid to knock the manager and knock the GM, because the GM, they all pay attention to that. Players are very in tune to what's being said about them most of the time. They claim they don't read Twitter. They claim they don't read a newspaper.
Yeah, right.
Not by and large, probably 9 out of 10 of them, they do. And they're very aware of their stats. They're very aware of all that stuff, what's being said and stuff. And they really take it personal when something negative is said. And that's fine. That's perfectly fine. So I just want to make the point that for the last 4 or 5 years, I've spent, both you and I have spent a better part of our time listening, researching, talking to people who are smarter than us, talking to people who know more about this industry than we do, and we learn from them, and then we're able to form our own opinion. And being in this industry so long, and when I say that, God, in 10 years, Topps could be broke, Panini could be broke, Upper Deck could be broke, I actually base that off of things that I've heard, people that I've talked to, people in the industry that I've talked to.
People that worked for them.
People that work for them. Yeah, people that have actual real inside information. And I get the sense that a lot of these kind of, to use a poker terminology, railbirds, fanboys, trolls, if you will, they haven't done that yet. They haven't taken that time to listen and learn and talk to people. Then you can blast off on people. Then if I can blast off on Mark Sapir, I can tell the industry summit guy, I guess he wanted me to do the same thing in Vegas. He wanted me to retract something that I had said. I can't even remember what it was. It wasn't even a really, I don't want to say it wasn't a big deal. It was a big deal to him. In the grand scheme of things, it's not.
Nothing. We don't even remember what it was.
I don't even, and he maybe doesn't even recall, but today he wanted you to retract something.
Yeah,
about
right.
Him saying the group breakers were innovative. The thing is, I will go under oath. I will take a lie detector test. I will bet any amount of money that I have that I have heard him say in Vegas, group breakers are innovative. Group breakers are tech savvy. Group breakers are kind of this new thing. I 150% know for 100% fact he has said that. And so when he wanted you to retract it, I was like, whoa, 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 you may not have explicitly said that in a tweet today or yesterday.
He deleted
it. You 100% have said that. And then here's the he didn't want to respond to me. So he said he wanted you to retract. And then I said, okay, so they're not innovative. And it was crickets. And then I said, well, why do you try to bully me? why do you try to bully me and you? Like, I just, You know, Mark's
well,
here.
I mean, I kind of took my shot at him. I mean, I don't. He can come back at me all he wants, but.
Well, he jumped in. Wait a second. He jumped into the conversation. I did not address him yesterday. You did not address him.
I did, yeah. I kind of took my wheel out. I don't mind him. Like, I don't mind what he did. My final point to him was, any customer out there, anybody listening to this podcast right now, if you buy into a group break, especially in the last 90 days or whenever you want to buy into a group break, I don't care what you get. I don't care if you get Robert Griffin III 101 worth $1,000 or nothing or something in between. Reverse the transaction on PayPal and get your money back. And tell PayPal the truth. Don't even lie to them. Tell them I bought into a group break. I got $1,000 Robert Griffin III. He sent it to me. I have no problems. But I want my money back. And watch PayPal give you your money back. How is that a great business model? Is that a great, sustainable, going to save the hobby business model? When everybody will just start rolling them, it doesn't matter what they get? You're going to be limited to, no wonder there's only 30 people in your Vaughn TV Live. First of all, there's only 30 teams, so you're going to limit your customers there. But second of all, you can only limit to the people you trust. Because any new customer, you've always got to wonder, is this guy going to roll me? Even if he gets the Robert Griffin III. Yeah, great right. Business, innovative, great business model, going to save the hobby, save hobby shops, put all your money and your time and your wife's money into it. Guys are idiots.
Yeah, the wife, there are more wives. And these girls are attractive. Like, you can't believe they're hanging out with these guys who...
Well, I mean...
open baseball cards.
A lot of you're from California, you know there's tons of attractive women out there. It's not like attractive women are in... There's... A lot more attractive women than probably baseball cards out there. I mean, there's plenty of attractive women.
Yeah, that's true. So I feel for these girls because, I mean, they're actually working.
they're the employee. Like,
sitting side by side with, you know, these guys as they sit there all day. And wait a second. I want to make this point clear because we talk about scale, S-C-A-L-E, scale. Yesterday. So, Mr. Raffler, who was breaking all day today or whatever, he broke cards all day. He didn't sort yet. He didn't ship yet. He didn't do any of that yet. That's a whole nother day's work, half day's work, several hours' work, paying somebody to sort and pack and ship and do all that. So he literally spent all day breaking. Now he's got to spend a whole nother time sorting, shipping. We're talking about 12, 15 hours worth of work just for a few cases where you make what? A few $100? $1,000? Shit.
I don't care how much money you make. It should be a million.
If somebody told me, Ryan, you need to wake up tomorrow at 9 a.m., you're going to come down to the convention floor, and you're going to bust boxes on camera for the whole entire show. How much would we have to pay you for you to wake up tomorrow, show up at 9 o'clock, get on Vaughn Live, and break cards all day? And later you're going to have to sort, unpack them, and ship them. You're going to have to do all that too. But today you're going to have to do this for 10 hours. How much? They'd have to give me several thousand dollars for me to even consider it. And these guys, I'm hearing guys that are making like $40 on a case. Because the margin is just shrimming and trimming. These guys are, they always talk about being undercutted and this and this.
This year sucks. Nobody wants to buy it. I mean, your margins aren't going to be, your margins are going to suck. Margins were good last year because people wanted it. It was in demand.
And you know what sucks about this Johnny, you know, I actually have respect for Johnny Manziel. I pardon too.
I'd do the exact same thing. Yeah, he does. Is doing
unfortunately,
right now.
Unfortunately, this is what happens. This is what is going to happen. It's his desire. A lot of people now are turned off by him. They're like, oh, look at this guy. He's partying. He's drinking when he's 20. He has fake IDs. He's going to Pebble Beach. He's sitting courtside at NBA games. He's a confident, arrogant, cocky, whatever you want to say. They're going to be turned off by him. He's not an Andrew Luck. He's not a Robert Griffin. He's not a Russell Wilson. He's not one of these guys where pretty much everybody, like, I haven't heard one person be like, Andrew Luck is a jerk. I would hate to pull his card because he's such a jerk and oh my God, he went to Stanford, what a joke. I mean, the only people that probably don't like him are Cal Bear fans. Like, that's probably it. Like, you know, a few select fans. And Robert Griffin, same thing. How can you say really something negative about Robert Griffin? How can you say anything negative really about Russell Wilson? I mean, the guy kind of conducts himself as class 24/7. And so these guys are able to kind of, you know, everybody would, wouldn't mind having an Andrew Luck card. Everybody wouldn't mind having a Russell Wilson card, a Robert Griffin. Whereas Johnny Manziel is going to be totally different. There's going to be some guys that are collectors that are totally turned off by him.
A little bit like Tebow. Not quite in the same, the way they've conducted themselves, obviously, but there's a lot of people that hate Tebow. But there's a lot of people that love Tebow.
But there's not as much love for Manziel.
Right.
Like, there's way more love for Tebow and kind of Tebow fans. Manziel is just kind of this, you know,
well,
caricature.
But
I think people are actually jealous of. To be honest, I think some of these media guys and some of these people
that are
on him, just jealous.
Yeah.
He's just jealous because he has the world that is,
we'd all trade places with a very few. Kobe might not, and maybe he does with his injury, but there, almost every athlete would trade places right now with Johnny Manziel, let alone the common man. I mean, the guy's banging chicks in college and going to playing golf, and he's got money, apparently. I mean, who wouldn't want that life? Sounds good to me. Sign me up. Send me to Texas A&M or wherever he is.
Right, but what I was trying to say is this year's football is going to be pretty, I think it's going to be dog shit.
It has to be.
I don't see any of these guys. I mean, if we're relying on Geno Smith, trust me, I saw Geno Smith. The guy couldn't get off his cell phone at the rookie premiere. he wasn't that good a quarterback in college. Like, and I actually heard that he would be in meetings with NFL teams, and he'd be on his cell phone, looking at his cell phone. So that's why he slipped to the set. That's why he didn't get drafted in the first round. Let alone his talent. His talent, does, you know, he's not Andrew Luck.
Your Jets aren't that good. They've proven that for the last few seasons.
Right. So this year's football is going to be tough. Is there going to be a receiver who in week 8 is going to have 120 yards and 2 touchdowns and his cards are going to go up 100% in value? Sure. But you're not going to have that triple quarterback class like you had in 2012. You're not going to have a Cam Newton who was a number one pick. You're not going to have Sam Bradford's the number one pick and Tim Tebow, who's, you know, a transcendent kind of celebrity, basically.
A.J. Green, I mean, the list goes on
Green,
and on.
Julio Jones, running backs, DeMarco Murray, on and down the line. Whereas this year it's going to be really weak, and next year the biggest star to me is Johnny Manziel, and with him kind of tarnishing his not that he cares, apparently, but, you know, him kind of tarnishing his reputation, it's going to be tough.
Well, I think he's just going to charge a fortune for his autographs, and like you already went through, the royalties, they're going to have to pay Johnny Manziel 10 times more than every other player in the whole set. There's only going to be like 100 of them, especially Topps. You know Topps isn't going to just give away Johnny Manziel's next year. Nobody is, but especially not a company like that. Good luck getting a Johnny Manziel. It probably is going to be worth money, whether people like him or not, because there's not going to be many of them floating out there. Johnny Manziel was smart. He would sign an exclusive deal and rape these guys like the NFL does to the companies and anybody else that wants a license with them.
Right. So it's the market and the kind of the landscape. I don't really, you know, I think, I just don't, you know, it's no wonder some of these, like the industry, some of the guys, some of these manufacturers, they've leached on to these group breakers as kind of the savior of these tech savvy.
Well, it's this year's money stream. It's this year, the hot thing, and then when they fade out, they'll find something else. It's a short-term. We talked about it on last podcast. They have a short-term focus because none of these guys have money saved up that'll last them more than a month or two, period.
Right.
If they did, they'd look forward. Like we said, big companies – like companies, car companies that have electric cars that they lose money on, or like the PlayStation coming out and them selling it for less than what it costs them to make it. Or it's just, you can go down the line. There's companies that will invest in a business because they have the money. Card companies don't have money. Box breakers sure as hell don't have any money. The only people that have money are the NFL and the NBA and MLB. and the owners that own those teams. And what did all those owners of those teams do? They all invest in the stock market. None of them open boxes. None of them. None of them do box breaking. So you tell me what a good investment is or what a good business is. Every owner that owns any professional franchise probably has a Schwab account or an E-Trade or somebody that they pay millions of dollars to manage all their millions. They don't open boxes. They don't do crap like that. Leave it as a hobby. Go to the National and buy cards. Don't think you're going to go there and get rich sitting in front of a camera all day. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. And, yeah, the only reason, you know, why these guys are being glorified is because they're putting money in the distributor's pocket, they're putting money in the company's pocket. And at the end of the day, that will dry up. It's proven. It's happened with every other aspect of this industry, from hobby shop to online sellers to even eBay sellers and stuff. Very few guys are like Prostein 123. Who can run a successful eBay business. He's the only guy there that, to my knowledge, that is kind of like cranking out this 10-person, 11-man operation where he's just crushing eBay. Most of these sellers on eBay are one- or two-man guys. Most of these group rating, or all of these group rating sites are one- or two-person people.
One and then the wife.
Who has a wife or a girlfriend.
Who basically owns the company and has to work there.
And has to work her normal job. Like I feel for these women, like, because I feel for them. Like,
I don't. I think just leave the idiot. I mean, there's plenty of guys out there.
Girls fall in love.
Yeah.
It takes a real strong woman to just be like, I'm out of here.
Right.
Like,
I don't know if we need to turn this into Love Connection, but we are jumping onto the hour mark, and that's probably, you know, we can't compete with a 3-hour football game or something else that's going on in people's lives. Any final thoughts here for the program? You got a couple more days here at the National. Got any thoughts for us?
I don't anticipate like a whole lot of excitement on the show for tomorrow, but at 8 o'clock central, from 10 till 10 supposedly, the TOPS presentation will be going on. I'm sure they'll try to delay any kind of question and answer session. Right. I would assume. I hope they don't, but I'm assuming, knowing the history of this company, that they're going to just give away shit. They're going to, you know, just kind of stall for as long as possible. You know, especially if they see like 4 or 5 people in the audience just like glued to their cell phone, like blasting everything that they say. So I think there will be some moments during that meet and greet, as they call it. It's essentially like an industry summit type discussion thing. There should be a question and answer session, and I anticipate collectors, from what I've heard, there are several collectors here that are ready to come lay this back down.
Good for them.
These aren't tweeters. These aren't media people. This isn't me. These are real customers.
Good.
Who buy products routinely. They're not a shop owner. They're not a group breaker who's just, you know, trying to get sucked off by, you know, the marketing guy at Tops or whatever. You know, it's real customers who spend real money and who don't make any money back in this industry and don't have a website and don't blast affiliate links and don't have a podcast and don't whatever. Like, these are real people who spend real money and they have real concerns. So that's what the one thing I'm looking forward to. And I think there's also a party tomorrow for two legal, legit group breakers, Mojo Break and Rich Layton Sports Cards, are having a little party, and they, from my understanding, have run a 100% legitimate business from the get-go, so they're having a party, and I think after the top thing, I'll go to there and hang out. So we'll commence sometime tomorrow evening, probably.
Sounds good. Yeah, maybe tomorrow we'll do a show tomorrow, since we got the top. I was thinking maybe no show, but it sounds like we got the tops thing, and
no, no, no.
You got some hard stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
So, we'll join you again probably tomorrow night. It'll probably come out the following Saturday morning or something like that. So, people got that to look forward to. Any parting thoughts?
That's it. I'm done.
Cool. Thanks again.
All right.